Radio Drone. Welcome to another episode of Radio Drone. Brad should be somewhere in Nevada right now, if I'm not mistaken. So Brad will not be here. But Gay Racula himself, the Marquis de Suede, is with me.
No, see, Gay Racula played opposite of Marquis de Suede.
So would that make Cecil Gay Racula then?
No.
I would be more like Gay Renfield.
Okay, fair enough. If that's the way you want to go with that, then hey, Gay Renfield, do you want to do the Adam and Eve promo?
Hey, if you go to adamandeve.com, you can get 50% off a single item, free shipping in the United States, 3 free DVDs, and one of them might be Gay Racula, and a free mystery gift.
What do they have to do for it?
You just got to go to use the promo code DROME.
Good boy. Good boy. A Scooby snack coming your way. Tonight, I want to talk a little bit about, do movies matter? Do movies matter anymore? Because I'm kind of on the fence about this. I think movies matter more now than ever. And at the same time, they're more inconsequential now than ever. Because I remember when I was growing up, when a new movie came out, a big movie like E.T., one of the Star Wars sequels, a Raiders of the Lost Ark or something, you would see it forever. You would see that parodied on Saturday Night Live. You'd see cartoons parodying it. You'd see the news covering lines around the block. You'd have all the tie-in books and everything. And nowadays, it seems like a movie comes out, makes a big splash, and then in 3 weeks, there's another big movie to come out. And movies don't seem to have the staying power that they used to, do they?
No, unfortunately, not at all. I think a large part of it is, how do you build and keep hype for a $200 million blockbuster when almost every movie anymore is a $200 million blockbuster? It's like they don't have that event thing around them. Like, I remember when Independence Day was coming out, and that was like an event. Like, they were building hype for it, and they put the thing on the Fox where they were leading up to.
Yeah, I remember Sci-Fi Channel covered the hell out of that, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it got people excited so that when the movie finally did get released, oh, everybody went to see it, and then everybody was just talking about it, and it was huge. I think it was number one in the box office for like weeks. And now, because of the way that the system works, it's like they get it in, they make as much money as they can that opening weekend. There's a 50 to 60% drop off the second weekend, and then usually after, like, you know, within a month, it's gone, and then it's on DVD within 3 to 6 months. So, like, there's not that, oh my God, I have to see this in theaters because, you know, if I don't catch it, it'll be on DVD soon enough. So the convenience of being able to get movies to the home faster is there, but they don't seem to resonate with people as much as they used to.
There's also so much distraction nowadays. I mean, there's more movies nowadays released in theaters than there were 20 years ago. And on top of that, you have the entire DirecTV market. You've got everything on Netflix. It's harder to get people motivated to go to an event at a theater when they're like, I'll watch it on Netflix in 3-4 months.
I think that's part of the problem. With the quick turnaround availability of video on demand and things like that, I think that does make people go, why should I go see it in the theater? It will be on DVD in 3 months, and it'll have loads of special features. When we were all growing up, you went to see it in the theater because the average turnaround time for a movie leaving the theater would be 8 months to a year to get the VHS release. So you knew you were going to wait an entire calendar year after it left the theater before you got to see it again. And even then, from that, it would still be another 3 to 4 months after the video before it would come to cable. Now, Cecil, you brought up Independence Day. That was the first one that started to change this. That was the quickest turnaround for a theatrical release to video. That's the one that started it. That only had a 4-month turnaround from theatrical release to home video because it was such a hit that they wanted to capitalize on. Independence Day is the one that really started this trend.
That's also when they realized that the movies that everyone wanted to see at the summertime were the ones that everyone wanted to own come Christmas.
And I think that that was part of the problem. I mean, even Batman. I remember in 89, Batman was fast-tracked out, but that even had a longer window than Independence Day did.
Blair Witch Project all had an even shorter one. Blair Witch was the first to go 3 months from theater to home video, although it did have the longest time before that leading up to its release in the theater.
I'm sure Blair Witch 2 was 3 weeks.
Quiet.
Yeah, hi, hush you. Watch my video.
Do you think that that small window, that small turnaround window, is the reason that the industry is losing money? Because for whatever reason, they still put all their stock on opening weekend. But then, I mean, like, you know, Alex, Brad, and I discussed in the box office bombs one, a movie could have made 5 times its budget back on home video, but it's still considered a bomb if it didn't make back its money theatrically. So if they're intentionally and continually shortening that window, why does the box office really mean that much anymore?
Well, I mean, look at Dread. Dread came out and it did really bad at the box office. And then when it came to home video, it absolutely just destroyed any predictions that they had for it. It made so much money. It made, I think, something ridiculous, like 3 times its budget back or something. But they were still like, well, we're not going to do a second one. And it's like, well, there's obviously a demand for it. It's just that when it was released in theaters, for whatever reason, you know, it was marketed poorly, or people were still thinking of the Stallone one, which I like. They just didn't go to see it in the theater. And then that was really quickly out of theaters. It was like 2 weeks or something, and it was gone. And it's ridiculous because they don't let movies get word of mouth anymore. It's the same thing with a lot of TV shows. TV shows will air and they'll run like 3-4 episodes and then they'll cancel it. And it's like they don't let that word of mouth go and get people to see it. I still think that they can have a longer theatrical run and then have the movie out on DVD. I don't see why they have to have this arbitrary, all right, we have to make all our money within the first week, and then if we make some money in the second week, and then it's gone in the third week. I think it's ridiculous, and it's hurting them. And then they always seem to blame piracy for all their problems when they're the ones that are just constantly hurting their own bottom line.
Yeah, I'll follow up on that TV thing, is because nowadays you don't get where you're never not going to have another Star Trek Next Generation where you have that really bad first season followed by six.
Hey,
amazing,
shush you. Shush
followed
you.
By six, yeah. Amazing seasons.
You know what? I'm going to tear your ass apart in one of these in a Star Trek episode retrospective sometime, because you are so wrong on that.
That first season was terrible.
No, it was not.
No, it was not.
I hated that first
that
season.
First
I'm sorry.
That first season totally felt like Star Trek with new actors. Yes, the show eventually came into its own, but that totally felt like Star Trek, damn it. Especially that conspiracy episode.
Oh, that was
awesome.
Which was the finale for the season.
No, it wasn't.
Nowadays...
Romulans reemerging was the finale.
Neutral zone
finale for season one. You don't...
The conspiracy one was not the finale?
No, it was right before the finale.
And they build up to that.
Yeah, like, that actually had a 3 or 4 episode continuity, the B stories all built up to conspiracy. So no, I will fight with you that Next Generation's first season was bad. In my opinion, the 6th and 7th seasons were the weakest for that show, but that's a different debate.
But still, the later seasons were way better than the first season. But there's plenty of shows out there that have had a terrible first season, and then just they take it over in the second season and become memorable. But you wouldn't get that anymore, because a show, if you don't stun us with numbers in 2 episodes, you're gone.
You might not even get that. Remember the Playboy Club? Pilot?
No, because it was
pilot,
one episode.
Gone. Yeah, pilot, didn't do well, gone. Didn't matter that we spent $3 million on the pilot, and we've already shot 5 more episodes. Pilot didn't do well, so no one's ever going to see these again.
Hey, maybe that 80s show could have come to something. We'll never know.
Enjoyed that 80s show. I actually have a VHS rips of it. It was good in its own way, but it was bad in another way. But anyway, that's beyond the point.
The punk chick was the only good thing about that 80s show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she, she was in Not Another Teen Movie.
She was also on the seventh season of The Practice too.
I never watched as
Lindsay's new assistant. It was the season before James Spader came on board and Shatner joined the show.
Ah, right.
But yeah, people don't give movies as much of a chance anymore in studios. It's like if you don't come out on top, you might as well not bother. Is what they do too much nowadays.
Do you think that is a little cutting your own foot off because of the way the budgets have spiraled out of control? Forbes.com did an analysis for Avengers 2, and the above-the-line budget is $450 million. That doesn't count the actor's salaries, Whedon's salary, marketing, anything like that. They're estimating that with all the everything wrapped together, Avengers 2 is going to cost just under $1 billion. Is that not... How do you expect to make money when you spend $1 billion on a film that has to make back its money in its theatrical run, or technically you've lost?
I just think that's ridiculous. There's no reason to spend that much money. Like, am I looking forward to it? Absolutely. There's no reason to spend that much money. And a large part of that is the ridiculous salaries that a lot of these actors are getting. I remember when there was the whole rush to $20 million, it was like, well, if you pay Jim Carrey $20 million, what are you going to pay Harrison Ford? And then if you pay Harrison Ford, what are you going to pay Arnold Schwarzenegger? And it was ridiculous. The fact, like, right out of the gate, you already have to spend at least $20 million. And now you get actors that I think when Keanu was doing Matrix and Matrix Reloaded and Revolutions, he got paid $70 million plus points on the film. And it's like you're acting like somebody for a couple of months and then you can go and do other jobs. Like, why are people getting that much money? It's ridiculous. And unfortunately, it's at the point where studios aren't going to go back on that. They're like, well, we're going to stop paying these exorbitant prices. But I remember when the whole thing with the Avengers was, because Robert Downey Jr. was the big name, he got a pay raise.
I think it was 50 million for that. I think it was 50.
And then all the other actors were getting mad and they're like, well, we're going to walk because he's getting paid all this and we're doing as much work. And I don't necessarily blame them, because it's like, if you could go to your job and be like, well, this guy's getting paid this much, I should get paid that much. You're going to do and know that more than likely you're going to get it, because they're at this point, they're not going to replace you. So, but still, it's like they have to draw a line in the sand eventually, because if this is going to cost $1 billion and they're going to, I'm sure they'll make it back, they're not going to make as much money. And then if they keep spiraling out of control with these budgets, it's just going to eventually blow up in their faces. And studios are just going to start going out.
Are you sure it hasn't done that already with Lone Ranger this last summer?
Oh, yeah. Well, Lone Ranger,
that was
definitely
$400 million, I think. And it didn't even make back 25% of that theatrically.
I don't know who thought a $400 million Lone Ranger movie was a good idea.
Especially when they really marketed this Johnny Depp in red face.
Yeah, with a bird on his head.
Yeah.
I'm like, this looks horrible.
They are really spending way too much money, because technically you do get sort of an investment back when you're investing $20 million in an actor, because it's not just the time that they spend in the role, but you also have the marketing tour where they're out promoting the movie. So there is a chance to get money back from the actor. But still, that's way too much money to spend on a movie, when really a movie is just supposed to be about entertainment, and people can entertain themselves for free. And there's plenty of lower budget movies that entertain way more than the Avengers that were made for $10.
But then look at something like, I remember this being a big controversy back in 79 with Star Trek the Motion Picture. That had a $26 million budget, the highest ever given to a single film in Hollywood before. Now $26 million is a goddamn Miramax film, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. That's also because Miramax doesn't really do independent anymore.
But you see what I mean, that Star Trek the Motion Picture for $26 million, that people were going, oh my god, I've got old star logs where people are talking about our budget's getting out of control. And can you imagine what they would have thought at a $1 billion budget for a single film?
I know this will set you off. If Avengers 2 is going to cost $1 billion, what is Avatar 2 going to cost?
Avatar 2 and 3 are being shot back to back. I heard there's a combined between Avatar 2 and 3 $500 million budget, but again, that's above the line. So that's probably $1 billion to $1.5 billion.
It's a trillion apiece.
We're eventually going to get there. These are the same studios that, like you brought up earlier, Cecil, are complaining, piracy is hurting our sales. Well, maybe if movie tickets were not $20 a piece to see a goddamn 3D movie that you don't have the choice to see in 2D, like Dread, when they only release 10% of the prints in 2D, so you have to pay the extra ticket price, and they wonder, why does no one go to the movies anymore? Even adjusted for inflation. When I saw Predator in 1987, what I paid for a ticket then to what I paid to see Predators a few years ago, it has gone up 5 times what I paid for a ticket. They wonder why movies have audience drop off. I don't get this.
Well, it's to go back to what I said earlier, there are so much more other ways to see a movie than just in a theater, and more people are utilizing that. So they're trying to justify their $200 million expense by charging more for ticket prices and upscaling to 3D so they can charge $3 more a ticket, when really it should just be about entertainment.
I mean, at the end of the day, I understand that it's a business, but there has to be a way, there has to be a happy medium. You can't spend these exorbitant amounts of money on comedies. You know, when you have like comedies that are costing $60-70 million, that's just ridiculous. Like a comedy, there's something
like The Hangover, which wasn't even shot in Vegas for most of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was shot in hotel rooms with green screened windows and Vegas put outside. I thought the budget went to shooting in Vegas. Stupid me, huh?
And the thing was, at the time, especially with the first one, none of them were really big name actors. So that's a case of where exactly did the budget go? Because it didn't really go to the actors that time. It's just ridiculous. There has to be something where, I think a lot of it too, CGI now is so freaking expensive. They spend so much time with all of these, with these guys doing all the special effects and all the render farms and everything. It's like, hey, maybe if you go back to practical effects, you could have a movie that'll still look good in 10 years or something like we were talking about the other night with Aliens. Aliens had a budget that was like half the price of most comedies.
It was $14 million in 1985 dollars when it was shot.
And it still looks incredible.
Yeah, because Cameron came from the Corman school. He knew how to monetize a budget, which makes the Avatar overspending even more ironic, I think.
Yeah, I think, but I mean, well, in the defense of Avatar, I know you don't like it, but he did invent some really amazing technology to use within the movie, and that's where a lot of the budget ended up going towards. Unfortunately,
he forgot to write the goddamn thing.
Well, unfortunately, all he did was basically take Pocahontas and put it on another planet. I like it, but is one of my lesser, of course I do, but it is one of my lesser of James Cameron films, like way down the list. But, and it's a shame because it was his most expensive. Budget doesn't always equal good.
Budget does not always equal good. And glood. Now, I was going to say that really movies are just about entertainment. You know, does the movie entertain regardless of how much it costs? It should still have the goal to entertain, to get people to think or to forget about life for a while. And you don't need a budget for that. They're managing their business poorly.
What about the sort of short attention span that we have for movies? I mean, let's take Avengers for an example. Avengers was monstrous! And then it just went away, and then the next thing came out. And that was huge for a month, and then that went away. Do you think that the multiplex, which by definition necessitates more theatrical releases, do you think that kind of feeds into the short attention span, that you can't just have 2 or 3 big movies to go see? You have to have 20 big movies to choose from, all of which are going to fail a little bit more than they would have if they were just released against one or two other films instead of 17 other films?
Well, I kind of have it cool because one of the multiplexes near me, they'll play the big budget movies and they'll also play some of the smaller movies. And they recently started playing Bollywood movies to kind of fill out the empty theaters, which I thought was kind of cool because it does give that extra bit of diversity to the theater. And every now and then, hey, you know, I might want to go see a 3-hour long musical about a robot. It does kind of feed into that weird short attention span that the country has in general. There was a time where the 300, which came out in 2007, that was for the longest time. That was the last movie I ever saw. I was like, I am never, ever going to go see another movie in theaters again, because when I saw it in theaters, I was so excited to see this movie. It had everything you could possibly imagine go wrong. There were kids in the theater. There were crying babies in the theater. There was a kid behind me kicking my seat. Just negligent parents all over the place. People talking on their cell phones. And after I walked out, like the movie was ruined for me because I was so angry. And I was like, I'm never going to see another movie again. And for years, me and my wife, we would just wait. And then, whenever something would come out on DVD, is when we would finally see it. So I think that is also another factor into why, you know, people aren't going to the theater, or if they are going to the theater, they'll go see whatever is hyped the most, and then they'll move on to the next big hype thing.
From a marketing perspective, they have to hype what's in theaters right now. So for the few weeks that Avengers is in theaters, yeah, they're going to hype the hell out of it. But then they have to move on because they don't want to still be hyping the Avengers 2 months after the fact when nobody can see it. They want to hype what's playing now.
But that used to not be the problem. When you had fewer movies, you had things like The Exorcist. That played in theaters for 8 straight months because people just kept going to see it. Empire Strikes Back played for nearly a year straight. Now, month and a half after a movie comes out, if it's a hit, it's still gone. Why do you think then that a movie can't stay? I mean, I remember when Signs came out. I was working at the movie theater. We ran Signs for almost 10 months, and we were still selling tickets to it. I don't think we could do that today. I think even if we were still selling tickets to a movie, they'd go, we have to get another movie in here. The audience attention span is demanding it.
Only so many times you can see a movie before you're like, yeah, I did that. I mean, there's so many movies that I've seen only once. Movies that I love, that they're like, this is the greatest movie ever, even though I've only seen it once. Because really, that's what a movie is good for a lot of the times. There's a rare movie that you can watch again and again and still have the same feel every time. But nothing matches that first time. And after you've seen it that one time, that's it.
I don't know. There's been movies that I saw and I hated it the first time. And then I went back and watched it again the second time. And I like turned around and enjoyed it, where it was like, I don't know what happened the first time, why I didn't like it. I think one thing, as far as old movie, you know, movies that used to be in theaters forever and ever, I know E.T. was another one of those where E.T. was in the theater for like a year, actually probably even longer than a year. If they're constantly worried about losing money and whatnot, and they got this ridiculously long back catalog of films, why don't they take some of those and release the remastered versions back in theaters? There were a few years ago, the one theater near me that plays the Bollywood films, they put the Indiana Jones trilogy back in the theater. And I went to see...
Only a trilogy at that point, which is kind of interesting.
What? There never was a fourth movie. What are you talking about? That never happened. Yeah, this was actually... Yeah, this was before Crystal Skull. Ugh. It was great. It was great to see them on the big screen again. Because ticket prices, they did knock them down considerably. But still, the event of being able to see it on the big screen and all that, it was cool. And I think that would be... To me, that seems like it would be a no-brainer. You know, if they're trying to fill out spots at the multiplex, why not release some of your classic back catalog? And I'm sure you would make a decent profit off of it, more than it just sitting there doing nothing.
Well, do you think then that something like what the Alamo Drafthouse is doing, which in theory I agree with, but as a filmgoer would annoy the holy hell out of me, Do you think that what the Alamo Drafthouse is doing is a good idea with them re-releasing old movies and making them, quote, interactive?
I have a friend of mine who he thinks that that's going to be the next big thing. And I hope not, because, I don't want if I want an interactive thing, I'll play a video game. When I want a movie, I want to be able to sit down and I want to watch somebody's artistic vision. I don't want to be able to, interact with it or to cast votes or no, I just want to be able to watch it and enjoy it for what it is.
Because for those that don't know what they do, for like they'll take 80s action films for like Commando, for example, and they'll have flame pots set up underneath the screen. And whenever an explosion goes off, random flame pots will go off in the theater. And then some of the seats will rumble William Castle style. And they hand out little cap guns. So whenever Arnold's mowing a guy down, everyone in the audience points a cap gun and pop, 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 pop. And it gives the audience an interactive experience with a classic movie. To me, that would annoy the shit out of me to try and watch a movie like that, yet they're selling tickets like mad.
So see, I wouldn't mind that for a movie I've seen 800 times already. Well, like Rocky Horror Picture Show. First time I watched that was I rented it on VHS.
I saw it on MTV on Halloween night in like 86 for the first time.
And then eventually, as I found out about the whole cult film and everything, it was pretty fun going to those Rocky Horror Picture Shows. I burned out on it pretty fast, but it was kind of fun. Because it wasn't really about watching the movie, it was interacting with fellow fans of the movie.
And something like Rocky Horror, I consider the exception. Because that's always been like that. I mean, that started happening back when that first came out. But something like, how often are you going to be able to see Commando in the theater and then you have it ruined by flame pots and cap guns and vibrating seats? Can't you just go, I would like to go see Commando on the big screen again?
Well, I've seen Commando enough times that watching it in a theater would really just be no different. It's a bigger screen.
Philistine.
Oh, I'd love to see Commando on the big screen again.
Without the interaction?
No, without. Well, I mean, here's what I think. Like, I do like the thing that the Alamo Drafthouse is doing, where if you are texting, if you're talking during the movie, they are chucking you out. I am all for that.
Oh, I have no issue with that.
But with this whole thing, it wouldn't bug me if they had two versions, if they had a flavored and an unflavored. If you want to go see the movie with the flame pots and the rumble stuff and all that, tickets are at 8. And if you want to go see the movie just vanilla, just the movie, tickets are at 10. If they do both versions with that, I have no problem with it whatsoever. But if they're only offering, hey, you can go see this movie, but it's interactive, then ugh, I am not interested in that at all.
But then why do you think that interactive thing is so popular? Do you think it's the influence of video games and the fact that, like, DVDs do make movies interactive today? You get to decide when the movie stops. You get to fast forward. You get to decide whether you watch the unrated or the rated. You get to decide whether the deleted scenes are put back in with seamless branching. Do you think that we, as a film-going society, have kind of been spoiled with just, instead of I'm watching what the director wanted me to watch, it's I want to watch my version of it.
Well, I mean, as I kind of talked about with the Blair Witch 2, is that I think that it's important to be able to have the different versions of the film on there. I don't really see that as being a bad thing, because a lot of times, actually, it's bad when a movie is filmed as an R-rated film and then they butcher it to PG-13 to release it in theaters, and then they're going to release it uncut on DVD because then they know they're going to be able to sell, more copies. Or they'll release it PG-13 on DVD, and then 6 months later, they'll double dip and release the uncut version. So in that case, that's a bad thing. I don't think that, getting a movie when it's first out on DVD, if you're getting the theatrical cut and the unrated cut, or they put the deleted scenes on there or something, I don't see that as a negative thing. I see that as a way of kind of going beyond the film. It's like, okay, I can watch this and enjoy the film for what it is, and then watch all the additional stuff, watch the director, listen to the director's commentary. I think that that kind of makes the movie a little bit more immersive and then gives you a lot more insight into it. Now, if you're watching the movie and, you know, you come to a branching scenario where you can kind of pick what direction the movie goes, that's where I start having a problem with it, because that's when it stops being a movie. That's when it becomes a full motion video game.
I think of it more of, if you want to see the movie in theaters, that option is available, you know, and there's places that do make that available. And home entertainment has gotten to the point where if you've got the money, you can make a home theater to where it can be the same thing. But I look on the things that what Alamo Drafthouse is doing, it's more of fans interacting with fans, that they're sharing a love of the movie.
But then do you think that the movies not staying in pop culture as long are part of the short attention span, but part of that shortening window between video and DVD? How, like I said, in the 80s, any big movie would immediately be parodied on Saturday Night Live. And knowing how Saturday Night Live writers are, probably for the entire season. Now, you're lucky if you get a single reference on The Daily Show before the thing's out of theaters. Do you think that these things are leaving pop culture faster? And I'm not talking about like a movie like The Avengers sticking in nerd culture. I mean the general pop culture.
I think because pop culture is so varied nowadays that movies are just like any other part of pop culture, where it's going to be a one-hit wonder. You have a song that'll come on the radio and it'll be in everyone's head for 2 weeks, and people be like, did you hear this song? Oh, listen to this song. And a month later, nobody remembers it. And movies, being a part of pop culture, fall under the same banner and do the same thing. Because really, anything that's pop culture relevant about any movie, after you've seen it, after you've discussed it, well, where do you go from here?
I think like something like The Crying Game. The Crying Game, the middle of the movie twist that she has a penis, that stuck in pop culture for years after that movie came out. Who is still referencing The Avengers? Who is still referencing Twilight anymore? Those things have just completely outside of their respective inherent fan bases have fallen out of mainstream pop culture. Go back to the 70s. Look at The Exorcist. That was parodied on everything. Even shows that weren't comedies had Exorcist parodies on them.
No, because you do have the ones that do really strike a nerve with pop culture every now and again. Something like Crying Game, well, that's such a notable twist. That was groundbreaking. You don't have as much groundbreaking nowadays, other than groundbreaking visual effects, but I mean, it's been since Sixth Sense where I saw a plot twist in a theatrical release that made me go, oh shit.
I think it also has a lot to factor into just the general short attention span of a lot of people nowadays. Something kind of comes and goes, and it seems like you said, there is a big, you know, fervor over it when it first comes out and everybody's talking about it, and then it goes away. They're just, I don't necessarily think that has to do with the shorter theatrical runs. I think it's just people in general. They're always looking for that next thing. And like, look at when something like Sharknado came out and people were going nuts on Twitter. And, oh my God, Sharknado. Da, 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 da. And they were just tweeting about it and talking about it, and making jokes about it and parodies. And then now, you know, it's gone. And they're gearing up for the sequel, but by the time the sequel comes out, a lot of that like excitement behind something so ridiculous is going to be gone, and we'll have moved on to the next thing. It's a shame, because I do think that there are a lot of really cool movies that have come out in recent years that, you know, should be kind of in the pop culture spotlight a little bit more. But for whatever reason, they just kind of have gotten pushed aside because people have moved on to the next, you know, whatever popular thing is out there.
Do you think some of it, though, might be just people being frugal? Like, I don't need to go and spend $20 for my wife and I to go to a movie and then have popcorn and soda and the gas to go there just to go see this movie once, when I know it's been cut for PG-13 and they're going to release it on DVD in 3 months anyway, completely uncut with a commentary track, a making of, all the deleted scenes for the $20 that I would spend here. Do you think it's people just saying, you know what, I can wait 3 damn months? And I, to, to me, that's what most people are doing, and that's where the industry cut its own throat by shortening these times between the home video release and the theatrical release. They've made it clear to the audience, don't bother. It's the same thing with TV shows. You know that TV show that was canceled after 4 episodes is going to be released on DVD by next summer. So why should I even bother watching it when it's on Fox? They're going to release it on DVD. I won't have to deal with commercials. It won't have the logo in the corner. The episodes will be longer, and it'll be all of them, including the ones they didn't air. Do you think that they're just cutting their own throat and then whining that it's bleeding too much?
No, because there's still plenty of opportunity to see it on TV and on-demand viewings when you watch it through any kind of on-demand provider still count towards ratings for the movie. And that's how a lot of people watch it. That and DVRs, those still count as ratings. And there's more people that watch that than buying the DVDs, because it's much easier to just, I have it on my DVR, I'll watch it in a couple weeks. I think it's more of people are just not watching.
I think that it's kind of a combination of there are a lot of people that are willing to wait. Like, there are certain movies that, whenever I see a new trailer or something, I'm like, oh, that looks good. And I'll wait for the DVD. It really has to be a movie that I want to see right away that I'm willing to actually go to the theater.
I know what you mean. Like, there are very few I make exceptions for. A Star Trek flick, Machete Kills, I'll make an exception for.
Mm-hmm.
Predators, Prometheus, that's about it. It has to be something I do not want to wait 3 months. And there are very few movies for me that fit that criteria.
Yeah, it's few and far between. Every now and then, there will be a movie that comes out that I know I have to go see it. And every now and then I'm like, you know what? Or it's just like, hey, we're not doing anything today. Let's go see this or something. But that's very, very rare. And I am looking forward to Machete Kills because Machete was awesome. Yeah, it has to kind of be almost, I mean, I guess for me, has become what an event film is. It used to be the gigantic spectacle of this, that, and the other. Oh, this is the greatest thing. Everybody has to go see it. But 9 times out of 10, I could give a crap about a lot of the really big movies, because most of the time, they're not really all that good. Like, I want to go see, like, I went to see You're Next, which was a very small horror film. And I thought that was tremendous. But I wasn't really in a hurry to go see The Lone Ranger or to go see Iron Man 3. Or even though I enjoyed Iron Man 1 and 2, I was like, I saw those on DVD. I can wait to see that on DVD. So I don't really have the drive to go out and see these movies on the big screen.
I do agree that, it's harder to find that drive to see movies on the big screen. That it used to be, way back when I was in high school, I watched everything at the theater. Nowadays, it's more of, I can wait. Well, the older you get, the more patient you become, I guess.
Well, then, do you think that it has something to do with the deluge of product? That there is just so much that you can't... There's just so much out there that you can't really get all that excited because you know there's something else out there to get excited about that... Like I said, in the age of the multiplex, you used to have 3-4 theatrical movies, big ones coming out at a time. You know, 20th Century Fox would have a film, Paramount would have one, Warner Brothers would have one, things like that. Now Warner Brothers is releasing 6 films in a month. 20th Century Fox is releasing 9 films in a month. How do they expect to make money when they're diluting their own product to do that?
Well, yeah. They are. They are really overwhelming the market. It's eventually going to be like what Activision did with Guitar Hero. They just kept making so many that nobody wanted any more.
Definitely. It's like they're diluting the market. And simply put, even as like a movie fan, there's only so much money, and the big one, there's only so much time you have. So it's like if you're releasing all of these movies all at the same time, and they're only going to be in theaters for 3 weeks, and you kind of have to pick what you're going to go see. And so if they're releasing that many, chances are that there's going to be a large chunk of that that just falls off the, you know, falls off the radar, because people just don't have the time and money that they're going to dedicate to go see that. You know, the people that have to get babysitters, or people that have to, you know, schedule their, you know, reschedule their work. All right, well, I work weekends or something, so I'm not going to be able to see this on opening weekend. So they don't really factor a lot of that in, and then they just cry how they're hemorrhaging money. They're the ones that are spending it poorly and then releasing things ridiculously.
Well, and then there's also, this is somewhat of a conspiracy theory, but you remember what Marvel Comics did in the 90s? Rather than directly compete with DC, Image, and some of the other independents, what Marvel did was dilute the market with so much product. They went from producing almost 60 titles a month to over 110 in a month, because your average comic book store only has so much shelf space. So Marvel, being a recognizable brand, was, well, if you buy all the Marvel stuff, then you don't have room to stock Image. You don't have room to stock DC product. Do you think that that's kind of what they're doing here? Like 20th Century Fox releasing 9 movies within 2 months. Do you think that they're trying to push the Warner Brothers stuff out of the theaters? That they're trying to push Paramount out of the theater? That it's, we just need to throw as much of our product out there that whichever one of these hits, it's good for us?
I could see that possibly being a reason. I don't know if the movie executives are that smart. I think because they're constantly just doing stupid things, and they're failing kind of in spite of them, or they're succeeding in spite of themselves, mostly because they're getting lucky with, they'll release a bunch of movies and one of them will make, you know, $3 billion or whatever, and it will save all the other ones that just underperformed. I could see them trying to flood the market, but I think it's a little bit different because of the fact that whereas DC and Marvel and all those are more like recognizable, a lot of times, I mean, if you ask the average moviegoer, hey, what movie came out that you really liked that was released by 20th Century Fox, most of them probably wouldn't know. They would probably say Lionsgate or Warner Brothers or something. So maybe that's their logic, but I don't think that that would really have as much effect as it would in the comic book scene.
Yeah, there's so many blockbuster movies that I can't think offhand the studio that was behind it. Like, did Warner Brothers make The Avengers? Who was it?
That would be Disney, because it was Marvel, but it was released through 20th Century Fox, I believe.
See what I mean? That I couldn't think of it offhand. That it's not branding. Definitely not.
But then doesn't it surprise you sometimes when... Just go to your movie theater and look at the posters and look at how many of them have a 20th Century Fox logo on the bottom. How many of them have the Paramount logo on the bottom? And it's almost like they're competing against themselves. So how can they bitch when one of their movies beats one of their movies at the box office? Do you see what I mean?
Well, no, because either way, it's still they're making money. That's like saying Walmart would get upset that somebody bought Pepsi over Sam's Choice because they still bought it at Walmart.
No, I don't think it's the same thing, because say Paramount releases 2 movies simultaneously. One costs $20 million, one costs $100 million. The $100 million film doesn't do shit. The $20 million film becomes a giant hit. That's not the same thing that they were expecting to happen. They're still competing against themselves, because that $20 million film was taking ticket sales away from what they thought was going to be their blockbuster. When you're competing against yourself, you can only lose, can't you?
Or you can only win, because all the money is going in the same pocket.
But there's only so many tickets. Every time someone goes to see movie A from you, then they don't have money to go see movie B from you.
Yes.
So you're segregating what the audience can give you, basically, in money. Instead of making one really good film that we think will make a lot of money, we make 9 films that will make a little bit of money and equal what that one good film would have made. It's still a deluge of product, though, isn't it?
But if people go see movies A, B, and C from 20th Century, then they don't have money to see movie D from Warner Brothers.
I think that's the logic. I don't think that's a sound logic, but I think that's the logic.
Well, I mean, this is a case of where on the movie studio side, because of the fact that they are kind of diversifying their money to a certain degree and giving X amount of money to a bunch of things, there are a lot of films that may not have been made otherwise. Like if they were way back, 20th Century Fox dumped all of their money into Damnation Alley. They were expecting Damnation Alley to be the huge hit for them, and they just sank so much money into it. And they also gave a couple of bucks to this movie called Star Wars that nobody was going to see. So consequently, if they had decided, well, we're just going to dump all of our money into Damnation Alley and we're just not going to make another movie, then something like Star Wars may never have been made, or it may have been made by another studio and it may not have had as big an impact. So I think that there is a lot to say about making multiple films, but releasing them within a very short time period is not smart at all. They need to kind of figure out a better schedule, you know, release them over the course of the year rather than dumping them all in the summer or dumping them all the fall or whatever. I just think that that's what they need to figure out. Is there a better release schedule?
But then do you think that just movies to your average person don't mean as much anymore when you can go to Walmart and buy a DVD for $5 that's got 15 horror films on it? Do you think that the movies themselves have kind of lost value, that I want to watch a movie? You don't seek out a movie anymore. You just want to seek a movie. You don't seek out a title. You just want to watch something. Do you think to your average movie, I mean, obviously there's the devoted fans, there's cinephiles like us and Brad and all that, but do you think to your average person, movies just don't really make that much difference anymore?
I still think movies make a large amount of difference in people's lives and what they, how they see things. It's just the medium of how they watch that movie has changed. That the theatrical experience doesn't matter as much. It's not as big of an event. It's become so trivialized lately that the main goal is, I've watched this movie and it's entertained me. It's how you confront that experience, how you watch the movie is what matters more than the actual movie itself.
I think, as reality TV has proven, it's not so much that movies matter to people or movies don't matter to people anymore. I think entertainment doesn't really matter to people anymore. It's so like just disposable. But I just think that it's just to the point of where there are people who they don't care what is in front of them. Is what's on? Honey Boo Boo? Okay, I am watching this now. Duck Dynasty? All right, fine. Whatever.
Oh, this... Hey, Ma, look at them funny people on the TV.
Pretty much. So, yeah. But that's the thing. I think that entertainment in general just is, to a lot of people, background noise. It's just something to have on while you're doing something else.
On that note, then, do you think the arrogance that I have exuded on previous episodes where I said a movie meant more to me because I had to work to get it, that, you know, a Godzilla flick would maybe only be shown on TV once a year and didn't have a VHS release yet? When you work harder to get that movie, it means more to you than when you can buy 15 movies for $5. Do you think that that's just something that's in my head, that the more you work for it, the more it means? Or is that just an outdated concept?
Still, I mean, there is that whole thing we'll never get back of that searching to find a movie. Yeah, it's really rewarding when you find it and you watch it and it's so good, but it's such a huge letdown when it sucks. And having movies that are like, oh, I can pick it up on this box set of 20 movies for $1 at Walmart, not as much of a letdown if it sucks. And hey, there might actually be something watchable on there.
I agree with you where if you work for anything, it's going to mean more to you. So if you had to search and really find a movie and then you get it and it's awesome, then it's all the better. But I mean, you could apply that to a book, a guitar, computer part, you know, just something that really means something to you. So that was something that you work towards getting, and it's going to have a higher scale to it. Now, for me, I was looking for The Last Broadcast, which was one of the, not the first, but it was one of the earlier found footage movies. And I had heard all the hype about it, and I managed to actually get a copy of it on VHS before it got blocked from release. And it wasn't allowed, you know, on DVD or VHS until after the Blair Witch Project had done its run. But that's a whole other thing. For me, like, that was really awesome because I'm like, oh, I got this movie and no one's ever heard of it. And it was really good. So that put an extra added value onto the movie. Yeah. Now when everything is so more or less easy to come by, it's like, what am I going to watch tonight? Oh, you know, what's on Netflix? Oh, one of any number of things. And you'll just sit down, click, watch them. Or you can go to Walmart and get something on DVD where it's like a two DVD pack of 10 movies. It devalues a little, but I don't think that it doesn't make the movie worse. Like if there's a movie on there that you really enjoy, it doesn't detract from the movie that you got a really good deal on it. It just is like, wow, I got this really awesome film and it came, you know, in a 10 pack and I didn't expect it. So it was kind of a surprise. I guess maybe it wouldn't make it as personal as if it was something that you were hunting for and you were really looking for and you were excited to get.
Fair enough. So we're running out of time. Where can we find Alex the Suede Jowski?
GeekJuiceMedia.com.
Where can we find Cecil the Stuff Trachtenberg?
You can find me at goodbadflix.com.
And you can find me at 1201beyond.com. Contact the show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. Have a good night, guys.
Radio Drone is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.